My guest is Ken Tucker, Fresh Air's rock critic, film critic for New York Magazine, and former TV critic for Entertainment Weekly. His new book is called Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy, 100 Things to Love and Hate About TV. When you were living in Los Angeles earlier in your career, you covered the punk scene for the Los Angeles Herald Examiner. And this was like the late 70s, early 80s. And, that was the extreme music of its day. And I've been working with you for years since you've been, you know, working on Fresh Air. And so I know you a little bit. And you don't strike me as like an extreme personality outwardly. Who knows what happens inside? But
I'm the only guy who people used to literally know me in Los Angeles because I was the only guy who would bring a book to read in the mosh pit at punk concerts. And they knew it was okay to slam dance against me, but just don't jostle the book out of his hand.
So when you were covering punk rock, and not being a kind of like physically outgoing person in the way that punk music is, and not being a loud person, did you feel uncomfortable or miscast at all? And did you want to get to know these people but feel like you were a different kind of person than they were?
I wanted to stay as far away from these people as possible. I mean, for a couple of reasons. I mean, I find in general, it's always a bad idea for a critic to meet the person that he or she admires. Most of the interviewing I've done are people that I like. And then I find, oh my gosh, then, you know, whether it's a month or a year later, they put out a bad record or a bad TV show. And I think, gee, I had such a pleasant time with that person. It's so difficult now to do that. A couple of things I've learned is, certainly in the art of interviewing, is that anybody can be charming to you for an hour. You know, I have interviewed people who've been just incredibly nice to me, and I'll walk out and then the door will close and I'll hear them, you know, screaming at an assistant or something. So everybody plays their roles that way. But as far as I was very intimidated, especially during the punk era, which was all about aggression. I loved it for its adrenaline. The music was just wonderful to write about, and it was really inspiring to listen to. But, you know, one time I interviewed Johnny Rotten / at that point John Lydon in his hotel room. And he was sitting on his hotel bed, and he fixed on my name, but sneeringly, of course, because it was Johnny Rotten. And he would say, "Well, Kentucky, what do you have to say for yourself today?" And we'd have this kind of back and forth, which was kind of adversarial. And literally, I'm warning your listeners that this may be slightly upsetting. But at one point, he just very calmly said, "Excuse me," and he'd been up like the whole night, and he was in the middle of a sentence, and he leaned over the side of the bed and he vomited, and he just and then sort of wiped his mouth, turned back, and finished his sentence. And it was just like I was like really not supposed to really acknowledge that this had occurred, apparently. And I said, "Are you feeling okay?" And he just, you know, kind of raised his eyebrows quizzically as if to say, you know, what's the problem here? And I just looked down at my notebook and asked the next question. So it's rock and roll, you know, it's a very dicey business.
Did you mention in your article that he vomited?
Yes, I did. Yeah. People really liked that. They thought that, you know, that completely fit with their image of him. And, you know, for all I know, maybe it was a stunt on for my benefit.
Well, I think it's hard to control that, so.
I think so, too.
One last question. Now that you don't have to watch TV, because you're no longer a TV critic, you're a movie critic, what are some of the shows that you watch because you want to?
Oh, I still watch The Simpsons. I really like Arrested Development and Curb Your Enthusiasm among sitcoms. The Wire is just hands down the best television show on the air or off the air, and I hope it comes back. I like things that other people may my age may consider junk, like The OC, which I think is really well written and has great performances both by its young cast and the adults, especially Peter Gallagher. So I found it surprisingly easy to stop watching an enormous amount of television, but there are things that I still make sure I'd catch.
Ken, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you an awful lot, Terry.
Ken Tucker is the former TV critic for Entertainment Weekly and current film critic for New York Magazine. And of course, he's Fresh Air's rock critic. His new book is called Kissing Bill O'Reilly, Roasting Miss Piggy, 100 Things to Love and Hate About TV. The French composer and conductor Pierre Boulez was once the avant-garde's most outspoken critic of the establishment. Now, as he's about to turn 80, he's become one of the world's most admired musicians, an opinion classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz shares. Lloyd has been listening to new discs of music performed by and written by Boulez. He's heard a memorable live concert in New York, and he even got to sit down and talk with the maestro.
What happens when an iconoclast becomes an icon? Composer and conductor Pierre Boulez has been the most articulate and provocative spokesperson for the musical avant-garde since the 1950s. 3 months after 9/11, he was actually dragged from his hotel room in Switzerland and arrested as a terrorist suspect at the age of 76, because some 40 years earlier he had made a widely quoted remark about blowing up opera houses, those bastions of the establishment. But now, Boulez's recordings win Grammys, and the very people who used to find him a cold perfectionist are praising his warmth and expressiveness. This year marks his 80th birthday on March 26th, and he'll be appearing in concerts all over Europe and the United States. This is good news for his admirers. 10 years ago, at a 70th birthday concert at Carnegie Hall, he led the London Symphony Orchestra in one of the works most closely associated with him, Stravinsky's revolutionary The Rite of Spring. I thought it was the greatest orchestral performance I'd ever heard, until I heard them do it again this year. With Boulez, this wasn't just music depicting a sacrificial ritual in ancient Russia, or an exercise in complex rhythm. It seemed to be about the way the universe functions, mysterious, spiritual, sexual, cataclysmic, also intimate and seductively beautiful. Here's an excerpt from Boulez's 1992 recording with the Cleveland Orchestra, which has just been reissued, and which captures some of the remarkable qualities of the live performance. To honor his landmark birthday, Boulez's record label, Deutsche Grammophon, is issuing 5 new recordings, 2 with Boulez conducting his own challenging, unsettling, but engagingly colorful and increasingly comprehensible work, as well as a recording of his 3 controversial early piano sonatas with the brilliant young Finnish pianist Paavali Jumppanen. There's also a disc of works by Mahler, whom Boulez regards as a bridge between 19th century Romanticism and 20th century Modernism, and one of Bartók, his 3 exhilarating piano concertos, each with a different soloist and orchestra. The Mahler disc, with Boulez conducting the Vienna Philharmonic, includes 3 song cycles. One of them, the exquisite and melancholy Songs of a Wayfarer, with German baritone Thomas Kvasthoff, is one of the subtlest and most moving vocal recordings I've ever heard. Even the orchestra sings.
Ging heut morgen übers Feld, tau noch auf den Gräsern hin, sprach zu mir der lustige Fink, ei du Geld. Guten Morgen, ei Held, du wird nicht eine schöne Welt, schöne Welt. Doch die Welt gefällt. Auch die Glockenblume am Feld hat mir lustig guter Ding mit den Blöckchen klinge, kling, klinge, kling. Eben morgen uns bestellt wird mich eine schöne Welt, schöne Welt. Doch die Welt gefällt, heia!
While I was in New York for the Stravinsky concert, I got to talk to Boulez. I asked him how he achieved that all-embracing expansiveness I had felt so powerfully in The Rite of Spring. His first response was personal, that this music was very close to his heart, his first encounter with something radical, with modernity. Then he spoke more about technical matters, about pacing, not letting the climax get too fast or it would lose its sense of weight. And then this master of precision and rhythmic nuance, of color and clarity and detail, said, "Of course, one cannot really explain the mystery."
Lord Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix. I'm Terry Gross.